Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And welcome to the AEW Dynamite preview. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by the Dadley Boys of What Culture, Michael Hanflut and Michael Sidgwick, here to look ahead to tonight's episode of AEW Dynamite. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review AEW Dynamite, but also Raw, SmackDown, NXT pay-per-views. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on wrestle culture. As I said, though, joined by Hamlet and Sidgwick to look ahead to Dynamite tonight. And kind of disappointing, sort of resting on their laurels off the back of Blood and Guts. Sidgwick, only three title matches, a number one contenders match, and Cody making an announcement for Double or Nothing and all the fallout from Blood and Guts. Not much to look forward to tonight. I don't know how they're going to fill the 2 hours.
Can't wait for this. I can't wait for this. This could potentially be an episode of AEW Dynamite between the matches, the stakes, the permutations, the narrative developments, the promos. We might finally have reached an episode of AEW where it's impossible to have a bad faith take on it. That's how good I think this goddamn episode could be. There is no women's match. Like, this is going to be an amazing show if it reaches its potential. It doesn't suffer those weird off nights where one botch kind of begets another.
Mm.
There is no women's match. That's not good, of course. And people are going to throw that in the faces of this show if, in fact, it reaches its potential, which will tell you how good it is if they've gotten two morons. Get a life. Like, so you need to get a life. There's one thing I'm worried about on this show. One thing. And we'll get to it. Simply one thing I'm worried about. But otherwise, if you look at the stakes, if you look at how close we are to the pay-per-view and they're doing this and you're thinking, well, what we're going to get at the pay-per-view, it's got, and I know there's not that many fans there, but you can hear them. They're coming back. It's got a February 2020 energy, all of this. And I could not love it more. We've maybe bargained, well, I've certainly bargained in the past about how good these shows could possibly be without crowds. This feels like it's coming back. It is coming back.
Yeah, of course, the announcement this week, AEW going back out on the road. I genuinely wouldn't have blamed you, Sidge, if you'd have said, got one problem with this show. Could it be almost too good? Because it's bursting at the seams, this Hamlet. It's ridiculous to have this off the back of Blood and Guts and with Double or Nothing in what? 2.5 weeks?
Yeah, it's a show so good, like in preview form at least, that Sidgwick is now taken to actively challenging his reply guys to come up with a response first about how he can possibly criticize this. I like really admire the confidence of a card like this. It's taken me about 6 months, and it really hit during the build to Blood and Guts for me to just accept what I was seeing as good with more good to follow. You know, not to sort of panic on the company's behalf that they won't have good things in place for Blood and Guts. And it was mainly, I think, the Revolution build, the delayed Revolution build, and a couple of pretty rubbish Dynamites, I thought, that in hindsight, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. I think they had every episode on the board, and then they had to move the Revolution date, and they had 2 more weeks to fill. And that's maybe where things felt like they went a little bit wrong, or where it felt like focus was slightly lost. It's because they had to magic things out of thin air, because they had everything else in pen. They had everything inked on the board, and I feel that way now. Blood and Guts was inked on the board, and the card that we're going to get for Double or Nothing has been there for ages. We're just going to be shown it and told it now over the last few weeks. I have no reason to worry about the pay-per-view. I have no reason, even less reason, to worry about the quality of an episode like this. And yeah, AEW sometimes fails to deliver on expectations. I'm not talking about the big stuff, you know, the ending of last week's match or the Barbie death match. If anything, it's sometimes a bit of a vibe. And like if a match goes wrong early, it seems to like suck the energy out the whole night. If that doesn't happen, I too share those sentiments. It feels like this could be like an all-timer.
We'll get into the title matches and the number one contenders match in due course. But we start, of course, with the fallout from Blood and Guts. And Sid, you had a great idea I saw on Twitter, I believe it was earlier today, regarding the coronation of the Pinnacle, which is set to happen tonight.
I think it would be a low-key, tremendous detail if, for those who pay attention, they'll get this and they will love this. And this is what this company is geared towards, that the audience, that is. I would love it. Kevin Keegan, love it. MJF and the Pinnacle were coronated as the new top heel stable. And more specific to the story, MJF was coronated as Chris Jericho's successor in Chris Jericho's traditional "I'm the ratings guy" slot at the top of that first hour as we transition into the second. Chris Jericho has dominated that all-important quarter. I just feel it would be such elegant showing and not telling. And to be fair, MJF could get away with telling it on the form he's in on the microphone right now. I think that would be the perfect placement for the segment. Like, I'm not gonna give it a down theoretically if I was writing that article if it doesn't happen there, but I just think it would be a really cute detail, like a literal version of him literally taking Chris Jericho's spot at the top of that first hour. As for the content of the promo, it's going to be scathing, I think. They didn't do this in the build on the last week anyway, with the idea being that you kind of have to put your opponent over. It's just the law of professional wrestling. Now's the time to be a complete dick. And what we know about Maxwell Jacob Friedman is that he's a complete dick. And the time is to gloat. And it won't resonate that well because of what we know about the way in which the finish was both filmed and received by the audience. So he could, if it went better and he cackled over effectively trying to kill Chris Jericho, it would have had so much more power towards it. But it's MJF on the microphone in 2021. He can haul that over the line. I don't think an explanation's necessary, no. But you can haul it over the line and sort of allow you to feel better about last week's finish. That's how gifted he is on the mic, and that's the rich form he's in. I want him to be scathing, and I want him to be horrible, and I want him at the end to juxtapose all that with the most glib, insincere dickhead thank you, and then the Pinnacle, who will look resplendent. I think it's a great idea to contrast. Like, did you see the tweet of Cash Wheeler's gear? Yeah, if they contrast that image with them all coming out, they'll have to sell it to a degree, maybe bandages on the foreheads, but in suits. I want to see them in suits. I want to see them as, like, visually, they are at the Pinnacle.
On the bikes, oh, no, Inner Circle didn't come out on bikes. I think it was their security, but an homage to that might be a nice little touch as well. Hampler, is it as straightforward as in the midst of all this, maybe an interruption by Sammy Guevara, or does it just get its moment tonight, this?
I'd like it to just get its moment. There's time to get to Sammy Guevara in particular's response, because he absolutely stole the show. And like, what was great about Sammy Guevara, the takeaway from that match, is that he stole the show before people stopped liking that match. Whatever point at which your enjoyment was tempered in that match, and I appreciate for most people, it's the big finish, but for me, it happened a bit earlier, and I sense that was the case with a lot of people. Sammy Guevara was nothing but gold in that whole thing, like with the exception of the surrender. So I wouldn't touch that this week. If anything, I think it's beholden to the Pinnacle to be over the Inner Circle and be over. Like, Sammy Guevara got to fight his way back into their attention. This is not a 69 me Don recovery needed here, but Sidgwick's terminology there is about right. Does need MJF to complete the hauling of it over the line. What didn't resonate for me last week, and almost didn't really need to resonate, is that MJF is a piece of shit. Like, this promo will do that. Like, that was almost too theatrical for the way MJF gets across just how cruel and awful he is last week. I think that was like a misread for me in that finish. The promo will be that. The promo will perfect maybe what the finish failed to last week. I don't know if they even overtly set anything up. I think they just talk about themselves. They, you see them getting off a plane, whatever, you know, the bikes, something maybe that like takes the piss out of the inner circle, but ultimately it should just be about them being them, and you can kind of take your time with Sammy and the follow-up stuff.
Yeah, I almost don't want to suggest things because I'm so excited to see, like you say, how they much they revel in this. The only little thing I thought of was if they're coming from the plane, maybe a little shot of them drinking a little bit of the bubbly.
Oh, yes.
And they added a little touch from Maxwell because he's good at these sorts of things. One sip. Oof. A bit bitter, that. And then he goes...
First one.
Right, let's move on. Let's talk about what we've got. A lot of things to talk about today. Let's talk about one of the title matches tonight, Michael Hanfler, and for the TNT Championship. Reminding me of TNA, a WWE guy coming in and squashing it. I'm joking. Stop on Twitter. I'm course of joking. I think this has been built very, very well. And when we get to Sig, I'm sure he'll talk about how they've changed his opinion on someone like Miro, who had, let's be honest, a fairly iffy start.
It's worse than that.
Yeah, Hanfler. Toby, I'm just going to get murdered by Miro, isn't he?
Yeah. It's quite nice that there are comparisons being made to the Brody and Cody precedent setter, because this feels a recovery as big as the Dark Orders, doesn't it? In terms of like outward perception, in terms of like how low down the pecking order that character felt in comparison to virtually everything else on a pretty hot wrestling show. They've arrived at the summit once again. Love it. Just love it. Cannot wait for the Darby Allin Hope spot, which I would like to think would include a coffin drop, because I want to see him just fight back enough to knock Miro to his arse once. And in that moment of desperation, think he's got to go for the coffin drop, perhaps on the apron, perhaps in the ring. But he throws his body at it because it's all he can do and misses. He's not needed somebody to throw him down the stairs. He's effectively thrown himself down the stairs. And Miro finishes the job with just a spine-bending accolade. Darby Allin, like, I imagine, has done his yoga this week because he looks like a body that you want to see get pretzeled for Miro to take this title. We've seen the template. They only need to tweak it slightly. Like, let's see the coronation. Like, really, really hyped for this.
I can't wait for this. How am I? I know the answer because you're Mark, but how am I putting the word perfect anywhere near Miro's name after the run he's had? And it's because Tony Khan is the well-deserved booker and promoter of the year. This doesn't absolve the terrible run. I won't forget it. It was so bad and so middling that the next time they kind of blunder over a push, people will get worried because they'll remember what happened to Miro. If this is brilliant, and it has every right to be, through not just the book and recovery, because realistically, it's not been that strong. I personally think Miro's individual performance level, his intensity, his just the little tiny moments where he's starting to slowly rediscover his confidence, like the walk and Xanax line was good. He's now starting to really balance like the comedy and the black comedy. He's discovering like a new strain of black comedy Miro with his stuff. If this is great, then it'll feel again like this company can do no wrong. And I use the word perfect because this dynamic's perfect. Miro was so ridiculously intense and strong. I think there'll be not just like this big spectacle of a match or a squash, or like a glorified angle, because it might do the delay element where Darby Allin like isn't going to come out because he can't, and then like he might just wave away a doctor or something like that. But Miro's individual performance level and intensity has been as good as the book, and his attack on Kip Sabian was genuinely frightening. Darby Allin being as scrawny and as unhinged as he is the perfect guy to get yeeted by one of the strongest guys on the entire roster. Like, he might launch him the entire breadth of the ring on his head and or neck. Like, this is going to be great. The dynamic's great. They would be perfect opponents. I say this often about Darby Allin because that's how great he is. But in terms of proper underdog babyface coming up against this monster that Miro is depicting himself as at the moment. That's perfect. Just the marriage between worked injury and finisher here is unbelievable, booking. The way they made that injury look so much worse with that awesome last week. His shoulder's knackered. What is Miro going to grab when he wrenches him back in the game over? His shoulder. Like, he's going to either pass out. I don't think he's going to tap. Like, referee stoppage. But, like, it's the perfect match between worked injury and finish. Like, they're goddamn great at their best, this company. So that's going to be awesome. I would like to see a prolonged hope spot. I don't want to see a full Brody Cody because we've kind of just seen it with Cage and Page. And I just think it would be... I think you'll get over sufficiently as TNT champion if it's a glorified squash because he's so great at wrecking people in this mode he's in. But I think he kind of needs a notebook match as well, does Miro. So I'd like to see a combination of the two.
From that, let's go on to John Moxley versus Yuji Nagata for the IWGP United States Championship. Sidge, for those who haven't gone and watched the Road 2, by the way, if you like me, don't really know a lot about Yuji Nagata. But what can we expect from this? And, well, are we getting Death Rider?
Oh, God. God, please, please. We've had Moxley work opposite Kenta in a match to build it, and we didn't get Death Rider, so I'm therefore not getting my hopes up. But please... Come on, this is AEW. This is the company that people love because they get what people want. Surely people have been saying, I'd love to hear that Death Rider theme. I just would love to see it. It would be incredible. It would be the kind of decoration that would take a 9 feeling show to a 10. Mm. As for Yuji Nagata was going to be a 90s sized superstar. And what I mean by that is a guy who could sell out the dome, a guy who was absolutely incredibly skilled and believable, perfectly in the classic New Japan mode. And then Antonio Inoki went insane. So it didn't quite happen for him, but he recovered from senseless shoot MMA batterings, recovered his aura sufficiently to be like a top headlining star and former IWGP champion. During that transition between the disaster and the resurgence, he was crucial towards that. And in a wonderful postscript to a career that might have felt a little bit snake bitten, he's just been an awesome old man. He's been absolutely incredible whenever they've needed him for a G1 or for a Suzuki match. Like, he's always delivered the goods. And in terms of what to expect from him and the match, he's got the best kind of arthritic old man energy where... You know, there's certain old blokes you see, and it's like, how are you so sinewy and wiry? And, oh, God, you look scarier to me than, like, a muscle monster. Yuji Nagata's got that. His movement is such that he's got such an aura about him. And he hits so hard that, yeah, he might take a little bit longer to get to you than most, but you're in more trouble than all when he gets to you. I'm not expecting a particularly sophisticated match. You shouldn't. You shouldn't want that. You should want these guys to pummel each other. Like, John Moxley's so great at strong style. The swaggering way that he does the no-sell spot. He's perfect. He was born for it almost, as he was born for everything. I love him. It's not going to be particularly sophisticated. It's going to be incredibly stiff. It might even be quite amusing and witty in its way, this match. And it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, I can't wait for this. Just to add to the perfect presentation that Sidgwick's laid out, Trunks Mox as well. Like, imagine...
Doesn't do it on strong.
No, I know.
I think those days are over, man.
I know. Get on, have another leg there, John. We believe in you. There's going to be a lot to love about this, even if it might not appear the conventional stuff that you love about a Dynamite from an in-ring point of view. I don't have anything to add to the, like, Cedric's laying out of Yuji Nagata or the presentation, but I am salivating over the prospect of an aftermath in which, so last week in the promo, John Moxley, awesome as he always is, selling the match, just said, like, you know, I want to respect you, but you call me a punk and the bell's going to ring and I'm not going to respect you. You're going to know what it feels like to get punched by a punk. He can respect him when the bell rings after the fact and he's driven his head into the mat and I want them to shake hands and it be broken up by the Super Elite to set up a 6-man on the tape Dynamite. Give me Moxley, Kingston and Nagata versus a combination of the Super Elite on the taped one next week. As like, would that... Omega in the books, yeah. God, like
seeing the guy slap the piss out of Nick Jackson, and I love Nick Jackson.
That's what I was thinking about. Oh yeah, I thought somebody from AEW called me a wanker on Being the Elite this week, so I want to see him get slapped in the face by Eugene Nagata, please. Yeah, like give us a like the respect was big on Mox's agenda last week. He's going to have his respect again by the end. Like Nagata's a mate of Kingston and Moxley, isn't he? Like ultimately, when this is all said and done, let's have the six man.
I love that, man.
That's a hell of a shout. Yeah. Who do you think? Do you think title retention from Moxley? You two?
Oh yeah, he goes over. He goes over.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Let's move on to the final title match of the preview, that being the Young Bucks versus SCU for the AEW Tag Team titles. Of course, if Daniels and Kazarian lose, SCU are no more. What happens here, Hamlet?
SCU lose. Mm. It's good stuff. Like, great promo on Being the Elite. Should have put it on Dynamite. Awesome run from SCU. Should have put it on Dynamite. But now they're putting the match on Dynamite, and that's the main thing. The honestly, there was an intended Rockers breakup energy to the SCU storyline kicking off in Britt Baker's dentist's office about if we lose, we're going to split up forever. It's a real shame that they've not been as loyal to that story as they should have been, because it's good stuff. Daniels looks like a guy, and like that's not meant disrespectfully, but he looks like a guy ready to ease into retirement and not be in high-profile tag matches anymore. Kaz, considering his similar age, experience and legacy, doesn't. Mm. They look like a team ready to split and one guy to try and have three or four more good years while the other guy eases into retirement or life as a coach or whatever. And the mate, this is such a great story, and like they've only told half of it and it's still great, still really great. Like genuinely go and watch the first 5 minutes of Being the Elite for Matt Jackson to lay out an even better version of the story of what we had on television. It is tremendous. The match will be great. These guys can wrestle each other in their sleep. This is the best version of the Young Bucks for this match, because what kind of couple of pricks want to split up two of their best mates from ever teaming together again? These pricks, this version of the Young Bucks. It's so spot on. Wish we'd had more of it. The match will absolutely deliver. We're all going to feel quite sad, and the Elite are not going to want us to feel sad. They're going to want us to move on. And like, I love these conflicting feelings of wanting to be able to spend time with Kaz and Daniels on this their final day, and the Young Bucks attempts to probably, right, move it along anyway. Dynamite's come on, EVPs, we've got a show to get to. Like, I love all of this.
They should have put it on Dynamite. AEW tells better stories on its YouTube channels than WWE puts on its TV. It just does. And what's such a shame is that it's not just a great story with Kazarian and Daniels. It's the fact that this started when the Young Bucks were still babyface. Like, it could have gone in either direction. Obviously, it was always going to go in one, but from the fans' perspective, if you look back, it could have been the Young Bucks doing full melodrama and being sad that their friends, they've had to be the ones to disband their friends. Given that Matt Jackson has indulged that a little bit too much, this version is so much better. So much better. As for the match itself, these guys have wrestled forever. They'll have one of the best psychological storytelling matches, if not quite what they were doing back in ROH and PWG, purely because Daniels just doesn't have it anymore. But maybe they'll sense that Daniels doesn't have it anymore. And I'm thinking we might see some kind of intentional botch. And the Young Bucks sort of barely suppressing their laughter at it after first, like, pretending to be upset on his behalf. There's loads they can do to tug at the heartstrings with Christopher Daniels and the pathos of it all. And I hope Excalibur points this out. The Young Bucks debuted the Meltzer driver opposite SCU. Mm-hmm. And I think that would be a nice thread to play with if Excalibur really nails that point early on in the match or at the first tease of it. Yeah, this is going to be sad. I don't know. Someone on Twitter, and I'm sorry, I've forgotten that person's name, has said that this is all happening just before Double or Nothing. And the betting connotations mean we might get a rematch here. Who knows? All I know is that if you're going to shoot the old dog in the head, right, get heat on it. Kazarian should get over as a heel in the post-match for me. There's no better time when, like, you're feeling sad, emotions are charged, to have Kazarian just do something horrible to him. That's how you get a heel over, and that's how I would do the post-match.
Let's move on and talk about the number one contenders match. It is Pac versus Orange Cassidy, 1 and 2 in the rankings, to see who faces Kenny Omega for the world title at Double or Nothing. Tough one to call this, Sid. Obviously, we've seen Pac and Cassidy face off against each other in the past, and Kenny Omega clearly thinks that only one person's going to win this. And I have no idea who's going to win.
Me neither. And that's a testament to AEW's quite crucial recent reintroduction of... Oh, hang on, I don't have this all figured out. Because, as I've said before, it doesn't personally bother me, but I can understand maybe why casual audiences, their brains fried from years of either Russo booking or just inattentive WWE stuff where nothing matters, look at an actual way to book a show and think, oh, that's a bit predictable, this. And looking at last week's segment to build towards this, you were firmly of the opinion that, oh, it's going to be Orange Cassidy. But it's, again, it's so deft. Okay. Them doing Brian Cage versus Hangman Page, which again links into this and how it's even happening. The fact that they've done that establishes, well, actually, you've got no idea. You don't have any idea. They're so good at this. I don't think I've ever seen or encountered a better booked promotion than this. That's why I'm so high on it. Like, I could go on a tangent for 5 or 10 minutes here talking about how great this booking is. But let's just talk about the match. That's what we're here to preview. I'm looking at this card and I'm thinking, does this go to a time limit draw? There's only 4 announced matches scheduled thus far. I'm thinking the crowd is going to probably act as the draw for that pay-per-view. The whole selling point is you're going to get a goddamn AEW pay-per-view in front of a sold-out crowd. Is this the point to do a triple threat, which isn't necessarily AEW's booking philosophy, but it feels like a freebie, if you like.
The dynamic on that match would be incredible.
It'd be absolutely unbelievable. I'm not a fan of triple threats, generally, but I'm way more open to them. One, because of the 3 men involved, particularly Omega. And 2, Edge, Bryan, and Reigns just had an absolute banger at WrestleMania, and I loved it. I would prefer Orange Cassidy versus Omega because I've seen Pac versus Omega before, but that's just AEW for you. I've seen their 4 3/4 star matches before. I think I prefer Omega Orange Cassidy. I do think I prefer Omega Orange Cassidy as a singles, possibly because I just want to see it be one of the better drawn AEW pay-per-views, just to completely dispel 2 narratives at once. But I'm thinking, genuinely, looking at this 4-match card, one of these matches is going long. I can't say it being Miro versus Darby Allin with the injury. I can't see it being SCU Bucks because they'll probably want Daniels to go out with an epic, but is the body willing, you know? Moxie Nagata, looking at like Nagata can work a 20-minute match, but I don't necessarily think strategically they would put an unknown to many people in Nagata on for like 18 minutes. So I'm thinking this could go to the time limit draw. I really am. I'd much prefer Omega Cassidy. So I'd be a little bit disappointed. I'd trust him to do something great, but this is like proper dream match stuff for me, Omega Cassidy. As for the match itself, it'll be great. We know it'll be great. We've seen it before. It won't quite have that joyful eruption feeling because there's not enough fans there, but there's loads to work with from that match. I would love to see Orange Cassidy try and do the role thing from one side of the ring to the other. Pac thinking, I'm wise to this. I'm just going to slide in and stamp his back. And then Cassidy get a near fall from the mousetrap. I think that would be absolutely stunning. There's loads that can do. Like, Pac's a brilliant wrestler. Orange Cassidy's one of the cleverest. What I'm trying to arrive at in a long-winded way is that if I get the result I least want, I'll still think it's great.
There's a little bit, some partial Dudley telepathy here, because I also thought this was going to be a draw. But I've got a different solution than the triple threat. I was having a look at the rankings, and let's remember that this match is based entirely on the fact that AEW have been loyal to the rankings and how they've brilliantly had Hangman Page get beat at the worst possible time. 1 week before he would have got this number one contenders match, we're led to believe. A draw, potentially, would drop Orange Cassidy and Pac in the rankings below John Moxley, who we assume will just be busy with the tag title match instead, and who is next below them in the rankings that would then go above them. Brian Cage, the man who beat Hangman Page and can suddenly walk through the front door into a match with Kenny Omega, who believes this draw's gotten him out of trouble at Double Nothing, and then stares down a soon-to-turn babyface monster in the form of Brian Cage as a kind of out-of-nowhere, as you say, not necessarily required to be a draw, out-of-nowhere challenge a Double or Nothing for Kenny Omega would be Brian Cage. In the event of an Orange Cassidy pack draw, the rankings would shift. Mm. And what a great way, again, to put over that system. Cage, you could even have him win one more match to elevate him even further, like above Moxley, so the Moxley thing isn't even great. They could easily arrive at that. And that's what I thought when I had a look at the rankings, and when I thought draw, that's what I thought as a potential way for them to... Because Kenny, it's in my head, the idea of Kenny Omega celebrating a draw, because last week he obviously tried to neg both of them in one promo. Yeah. He tried to undermine Cassidy and Pac at the same time to sell that he's threatened by both of them in very different ways. So if he thinks he's gotten out of the worst case scenario and then he finds that there was a new, far worse one waiting all along, looming in the background in the form of that silhouetted outline of Brian Cage, I think that'd be a great way to to tease two amazing matches and then deliver a third one would be another booking flex. But I also think the draw, whatever they end up with a Double or Nothing, I'll have this go into the time limit as well.
I've literally got no idea. You can tell me anything. I have no clue how this finishes. So I'm just going to enjoy it and not do any predictions for this one. But what do you think in terms of predictions, Hamflet? Cody's big announcement is going to be mine and Sidgwick's new best friend, Anthony Ogogo, on Twitter. Obviously laying him out following that match with QT Marshall last week. What do you reckon it's going to be tonight?
I want the singles match. I want Cody to do that thing where he says, I get it. You're not going to be the first guy around here that's thought, well, the way to get to the top is to jump the line and attack the boss. And you won't be the last, but I'm going to make you pay for it, a Double or Nothing. Like, this is my family business and you've got to learn a lesson because you've come from another one. Something just as straightforward as that, because I think Ogogo can do it. And I want to have my faith in him rewarded with a match against a guy that, you know, like you would trust him with, a general in Cody Rhodes, in TNT title defense form, in Shaq tag match form, on a pay-per-view in a singles match. Yes, you can have a lot of fun with the big multi-man, it'd be bunkhouse, wouldn't it? That's the word they'd go for. But you can have like a lot of fun with the bunkhouse match between the family and the factory, something akin to Stadium Stampede from last year's event. Loads you can do with it, of course. But like, whilst QT Marshall is there as a vehicle to get the factory over, I'm not necessarily feeling like Camarado or Solo are at that level yet, but Ogogo is. So just rocket strapping, go for the Ogogo match and just work around Cody avoiding a punch for 10 minutes. I've sold myself on the singles match, and that's what I'd like. Cody's one of the few people on this that can call his shot for a pay-per-view. He pretty much did without cutting a promo. I think I'll be in that ladder match for the Sonic the Hedgehog ring. Well, okay then. Like, you've got about four interviews going on, but you're just going to go into that one. Like, his character can do that, and I think he'll do that here too. Ogogo in the singles match for me.
I've taught myself into the singles match as well. The bunkhouse, which I fantasy booked because we've seen Dustin Rhodes get the bull rope out, seen the wooden chairs, seen like they act as, they double as seeds, if you like, to sort of grow the idea of a bunkhouse. But they can probably do that at Dynamite. Might even do it one of the first live ones. Then again, if you look at the layout of Daly's place, it's probably better. Anyway, Kuria Gogo, simple setup, simple, wonderful body part match, all of which is in service. And I'd get Ogogo over. Like, Cody Rhodes has got different ambitions now. He can absorb losses. He can then take time out and come back to a point where you've just forgotten that he's had these losses in the first place because he's Cody Rhodes, and he's still going to get those receptions in the new live setting as well. Mm. Anthony Ogogo is fantastic patter on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Patter for days, He's like the 97 Bret Hart. Like, the Americans will think he's a knob, but the Brits will just think he's a tidy dot. And legit, if he can translate that Twitter energy when interrupting Cody to build this match, then people will be big time on the hook. Like, he's emerged not out of nowhere. They've obviously been doing the work. So it's not out of nowhere at all, but he's just, he's exploded in a way that is more impressive than it appears to be in itself, because there are so many new faces on the show all the time. It's quite easy to slip through the cracks when you're new, which is insane, because I remember the old vignettes growing up watching The Fed, and you'd think, oh, I need to see this person right now. AEW's roster is such now that someone new, and it's like, all right, okay, well, you're old a week ago. Google is just stolen the spotlight from so many of these new guys who've appeared on the scene, and it's the mark of a star. And if that's the mark of a star, I'm with Hamfoot, they should promote him as one at Double or Nothing.
Yeah, absolutely. One final thing to preview ahead of tonight's show, Sige, and that is an interview with Jade Cargill, hosted by Tony Schiavone. What happens here?
The manager reveal. I can't see them advertising on a massive card like this, no less, a live interview if she's just going to then say the same thing she's been saying in the vignette.
Hmm.
Makes no sense. I expect that to be the big manager reveal tonight. As for who that is, I've got no idea. Zelina De La Renta gets raves. Zelina Vega, Tia Trinidad would be awesome in the role.
Oh yeah.
They might do something similar, because Vicky Guerrero could sell the hell out of this. Even Matt Hardy, if he's up for it, could do something like this. It didn't quite land, but the joke, the execution of the joke I'm about to use as an example, didn't land, but the structure's timeless. When Kip Sabian was doing the whole Miro thing, when he was bringing out the two geeks, I think it was Pillman Jr. and someone else, and then it was Miro. They could do that with two managers and then reveal the actual manager. Vicky Guerrero, annoyed that she wasn't the manager, screaming, excuse me, up the tunnel, is an open goal that they should not miss. Don't know who the air manager is going to be, but I feel like it's going to get revealed tonight.
Yeah, it's Miss Elizabeth, isn't it? While all the other like losers line up for Randy Savage's name, and it just turns out to Miss Elizabeth. Thea Trinidad would be the one for me, because you kind of immediately then have another heel babyface dynamic isn't perfect, but then you kind of immediately have like an Insta program with Jade Cargill and Nyla Rose. And Nyla Rose is somebody awesome for Jade Cargill to go over as well. Mm. As a, like, not like a first major scalp, because Red Velvet was that, but like a pretty early major scalp for Jade Cargill. Mm. I also want her to pass comment on, if only because it keeps her in the conversation and it brings them into it too. Britt Baker and like her title aspirations, and like Hikaru Shida still being champion. Like, us not previewing them here doesn't mean that they're not going to show up in some capacity on Dynamite, but we called for that last week. Like, Britt Baker's lined up now. We've had the graphic. Let's have the story. And if it's not going to be just a manager reveal, maybe find a way for Jade Cargill to like commence aggro with Tay Conti, because Jade Cargill's got to be looking at those rankings. She's beaten Red Velvet. She can't yet get a shot at Hikaru Shida. That's Britt Baker's. Next on the list is Tay Conti. Conti's coming off the back of the Shida loss. It'd be a nice story for her. There's options here, and I hope they take a couple of them beyond Jade Cargill just putting herself over for 2 minutes, because there are ways to have something else after the fact, and I don't think they'd put this on Dynamite without that in mind.
Mm. Now, before we wrap up, we used to obviously do predictions for ratings and stuff, and I don't really want to suggest what you think it's going to do tonight, but you know, we should revel in the fact that AEW were number one in the ratings last week, 0.42 in the 18 to 49 demographic, 1.09 million viewers. A hell of an achievement, that, Sige. And, well, how do you think it plays out this week?
I don't know. I don't know. Promotion feels hot. This card feels massive. But that fall was mocked. And using precedent to inform a half prediction, we might as well predict it. People did not like that explosion at Revolution at all. The recovery job was great, but let's face it, going unopposed got that audience back, not the recovery job. Maybe there's a bit of lingering. Like, people who don't think too deeply about this, and I'd say they're thick, but some wrestling fans are thick, let's face it. They don't think, all right, okay, well, the fall sucked, but look at the elegance of the way they've removed Hangman Page from the rankings. don't I relate with his mental health struggles? Like, you, Billy Dickhead from Arkansas isn't going to give a toss about that. He's going to think, I saw the cardboard. Stupid shit. I can't watch this anymore. There's an element of that, I think, and it'll dip to the 900 range.
Billy Dickhead. Sounds like somebody like Nigel McGuinness would name in a promo once upon a time. All right, Billy Dickhead. That's right, Mauro. Cedric's point about it's like almost forgotten now because of how hot this promotion feels and how well they've done since the end of the Wednesday Night War. It's like the post, they did really well creatively to like deal with the explosion thing. But it felt like a slump ratings-wise, didn't it? Once a week, they was like, oh, Christ, they're going to take a while to recover that. And then it turns out, like, without another wrestling show to watch, they've kind of recovered it, no bother, and the creative's really good. I'd like to think there won't be a huge slump as a result of that finish, because I think some people were still fairly happy with the finish, like, ignoring some of the discourse on the Thursday. Like, a lot of blood and guts delivered. So, you know, maybe that'll be enough. There was a real atmosphere to the start of it, which I think would have reminded casual viewers what wrestling's supposed to look like. So maybe they'll come back for that too. And even the stuff that, like, so I was pretty critical of a lot of it feeling a bit WWE. They've gone to the roof. They've done the five-man standoff, all that sort of stuff. Maybe those compromises might work in AEW's favour. You know, maybe the fact that this looked like something that casual fans wanted to watch will benefit them too. Like, it's just really fun the longer they stay above a million, because it's almost as if, like, the Alvarez tweet remains on the wind-up even when there's not an NXT number to rival it against. So, yeah, like, for the good of everybody, like, that seven figures looks nice, and another high cable rating might look nice. And, like, again, we're not even talking about, like, presidential addresses or Cinco de Mayo this week. So a number without any of those extraneous factors would be brilliant, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. I was going to say, you know, people say, oh, it's excuses or whatever, but they have valid concerns, the presidential address and Cinco de Mayo and what have you. And I think, yes, there may be a backlash to what happened to conclude Blood and Guts, but I still think, and I hope, that AEW does over a million, because it merits it, you know, regardless of what happened last week. They're going to put nothing. They put Tony Khan farting on for TV for two hours last week. This card merits over a million viewers without question. There's such stakes and stuff going into it. So I hope they do, and I think they will. But let us know your thoughts on that and everything we've discussed today ahead of AEW Dynamite tonight on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Watch there. You can follow all three of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett at
Michael Hamflett.
You can follow Michael Sidgwick at
Sidgwick.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at What Culture WWE. And make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from. For daily wrestling podcast, our NXT review is available right now. And our review of this show will, of course, be available tomorrow, as well as Simon Miller's ups and downs. But for now, this has been the AEW Dynamite preview. My thanks to the Dudley Boys. Thank you for joining us. And we will see you soon.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.